This is your typical radio ad while eating a Crunch Bar.
This is Automatic of Otto's Used Cars. This weekend only, we're having a whale! Bring the kids. See for yourself. It is huge. Gonna make a big splash. No other dealer can say they have a whale like this.
When things sound dull, turn up the fun with Crunch.
This episode is brought to you by Merrick Pet Care. For over 30 years, Merrick has crafted high-quality dog food. Since our founding in Hereford, Texas, all of Merrick's recipes have prioritized whole nutrition with deboned meat, fish, or poultry as the number one ingredient. That's why we say real is our recipe. Real ingredients and homestyle flavors your pet loves. Look for new Merrick packaging with real ingredients shown on the bag and inside it. Find it online or in your local pet store.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 140 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. It's been a little while. Last time we got together was before Blackpool, wasn't it, Lee? I think last time we spoke, and obviously before Dynamo Kiev, and I went away for a couple of weeks. Missed the Chelsea game, unfortunately. But I'm back as of today, sitting here with the jet lag now setting in. I'm a little bit tired, but we've got a lot to discuss. It's been a busy time for Everton. Obviously, the Premier League season kicked off last week against Chelsea. We've had new players come through the door. There's more players linked again as we speak today in the striker department. So loads to discuss.
And you're going to tell the listeners, mate, where have you been? You've been you've been wrestling with a few gators in like the Scouse version of Steve Irwin in Florida, haven't you?
In the Everglades and all that. On one of those big fan boats, yeah. If only. No, just listen. Just a little 2 weeks away. It's taken a while to get there because of COVID and what have you. But 2 weeks over in Orlando, which has been nice. A lot to do. A lot going on. Food poisoning as well, just to really make it a memorable holiday, which was a bit of a poor experience. But listen, it was a good 2 weeks, and back now refreshed, if you can be, when you go to Florida, because everyone who's been and does all the parks will know how busy your time is when you go over there. But back now, Everton, you know, great to see us busy, I've been keeping a close eye on things while I was over there, obviously with the signings, and watched the Chelsea game over in Orlando as well. No better place to start, really, is it, than the Chelsea game, to be honest. Obviously, you were there. You took my ticket for the game. Although we've come away with a 1-0 defeat, there was plenty of positives, I thought, to take from the game, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think that was the general consensus, speaking to people around me as well, mate. It was a weird sort of game. It was quite a bitty game, and both teams sort of lacked that bit of cutting edge up front, you know, a bit toothless, really. You know, Chelsea, as expected, same when we played them towards the end of last season when we had that big win, you know, had most of the ball. They knocked it around nice. Their movement off the ball was decent. You know, we know they're going to, you know, we could pretty much have predicted that before. And but, you know, they didn't really get through. As you know, I must give massive credit to Frank and the team there. You know, they've clearly looked at areas where we've been vulnerable, you know, and we have been vulnerable, let's be honest. You know, we've been really soft at times in games, haven't we, where the teams have got through us too easily. But we looked really solid. It was only really a lapse of concentration at the end of the first half, and that killed us, really. And in all fairness, you know, I'm sure most people agree, really, Decore's obviously got wrong side, twitched off. And, you know, he probably didn't even really need to put anything on him. Mina was coming across there. You know what I mean? And obviously, you know, Chilwell would have had to have got a snapshot off. He probably would have just toe-poked it or something. because obviously Mina was coming over, like I said. So it was a bit, it was just annoying that we gave away. That was really the difference between the two sides, wasn't it? Was the pen. I think it was relatively even other than that. You know, we had a couple of breakaway moments. I wanted to mention as well, I'm sure we can talk about this, but it was clear, obviously, Frank had been preparing this team with Dominic Calvert-Lewin in mind, isn't he, at the start of the season. Everything's been shaped to sort of build the team around Dom in terms of getting crosses in and people like that. You know, with Patterson out wide, McNeil, you know, Michelin, Vinagre obviously loves the cross. I think, you know, Vinagre and Patterson seem to have a really good cross on them, don't they? So it's nice to have two fullbacks for a change that are good at putting in crosses on both sides. That's clearly destroyed his plans, you know, Dom pulling up in training. And he had a choice, didn't he, whether to go with Dele Alli through the middle and play like a false nine with maybe Gordon off him or something, or go with obviously out and out pace. And he went obviously with Gray and Gordon. And I can see the logic in that, you know what I mean? Because when we caused Chelsea problems at the end of last season, it was primarily down to the fact that we, you know, if you look at the goal, it came from us pressing them high with pace and intensity, wasn't it? And Dele isn't pace and intensity, is he? You know, Dele sort of plays the game at his own pace. He's almost like Berbatov style, isn't he? You know, I mean, he's very good technically. And I can see the logic in him thinking, well, look, pace will, you know, get pace in and around Thiago Silva, for example, get him turned, running towards their own goal. And, they just didn't quite have the nous, did they, those two, particularly Gordon, in terms of being able to play that role up front. And in the end, it's cost us, sadly. It was a lot of endeavour. We just completely lacked that cutting edge and, you know, clearly showed that we obviously need to get someone in with Dom being out, whether that's Brozier or Dennis, or, you know, we've been linked with Gressi, haven't they, recently as well. Or we just definitely need someone there because I think we really lacked that cutting edge, don't you think?
Massively so. I think it was quite obvious, really, wasn't it? You know, a lot of plaudits for us defensively, and rightly so. You know, we faced 16 corners, and I thought we defended all 16 very, very well. You know, they had a few free kicks out wide as well, Chelsea, which I thought, again, we defended well. And that's because of, you know, the players who have come in, of course. James Tarkowski, we say it time and again, he's a leader. He's used to that kind of defending, if you like, from his time with Burnley. And also, I thought when he came on, Mason Holgate did particularly well. You know, you can see there's been a lot of work done on the training ground, I think, over the course of the pre-season and in the build-up to that particular game. We knew that was a real weakness of ours, especially, you know, even, you know, since Frank Lampard has come in. We've been poor, very, very poor, and conceded a lot of goals from set pieces. So it was nice to see us look comfortable. And to be fair, defensively, I thought we did well all game. But like you say, it's that cutting edge, you know, not having a central striker. The system that Frank Lampard is building, or is using at this moment in time, is very much built for a Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and it's to utilise a bit of pace on the flanks. And, you know, to utilise him in holding the ball up, you know, as a pressure release when we need it, especially against this kind of side, you know, where we give up and quite a bit of possession over the course of the game. We need to have somebody up there to, when we need to go long, to just bring it down, you know, win a free kick, knock the ball off short, and then go again. And, you know, we were doing it to Anthony Gordon, and it just was never going to work, you know, and that's not Anthony Gordon's fault. It's just not going to work. And like you say, there's been a lot of links to strikers. There's even more today. I mean, just before we started recording, Tay Adams, apparently we're in for him on a loan with a view to buy. So what's the space on that one? We'll discuss that shortly anyway. But you could see the gap. You could see where we needed to improve. You could see, obviously, where we still haven't dipped our toe into the market for a striker just yet. And that's really important now, with Dom obviously being out for the length of time he's out for, about 6 weeks or so. There's a lot of games in 6 weeks. You know, we need to have somebody up there. We can't go into every game doing what we did against Chelsea, looking good defensively, but not having any cutting edge up top.
Totally agree, yeah. Totally agree. I thought the defence was outstanding, like you said. Tarkowski, seen him in the flesh, he's a really big lad, mate. He talks a lot. You can see he will improve other defenders around him, and he's already showing that already. You know what I mean? Because he's clearly a leader, like you said. He's a natural leader. He won a lot of headers. He was strong in the tackle. Obviously, the goal was an absolute farce in a way, because obviously, you know, Sterling's gone down without anyone near him. Should have been arguably a free kick to us, a yellow card. Obviously, the referee's given a free kick to them. The next phase of play has led to the goal, hasn't it? So, you know, how far do you go back on VAR? But, you know, anyway, enough about that. But yeah, there's a lot of positives to take. Tarkowski being one, like you said, Holgate did well when he came on. I thought Patterson, that formation really suits him. You know, in terms of his strengths are obviously going forward, travelling with the ball, being aggressive in the tackle, you know, being aggressive full stop and just pushing forward. He was arguably one of the contenders for man of the match, Patterson. You know, he's got a really good delivery on him as well. He had a bit of a spat with Chilwell. I quite like that. You know what I mean? It's his Premier League debut and Chilwell's obviously an international and, you know, he wasn't in, you know, in fear of him whatsoever. You know what I mean? He was prepared to give it back to him and I thought Patterson was outstanding. I thought Iwobi in the middle, they obviously played a pivot of two sixes there really, didn't they? I thought Iwobi and Doucouré played well, particularly Iwobi. I thought Iwobi was, you know, his energy across the pitch, his ability to track back. He basically backed himself to be Sterling on so many occasions for pace. And, you know, he was outstanding there. And when he had the ball, he used it really well. You know, we know he's a good passer of the ball. He likes to obviously thread the ball through the lines. And, you know, I thought he was outstanding really in the centre of the park there. And Frank obviously rightly gave him plaudits after the game. You know, and you know, I thought, as I said, Vinagre, when he came on, you know, he looks like he's going to be a slightly different player to Mykolenko, doesn't he? He's less defensive orientated. Obviously, Frank brought him on there to maybe try and get forward, and Mykolenko stepped into that left centre back role, which I think, you know, he acquitted himself well as well. So overall, there was just lots of positives. Like you said, it was just we just lacked that, like you said, Dom, or you know, like we had with Charleston last year. I mean, it can't be exemplified more in that first half where Gray cut in on his right foot from the left-hand side, whipped in a great ball. Anthony's found a bit of space between the centre halves and he's closed his eyes, hasn't he? You know, if that's Dom yes. there, bang. You know what I mean? He's headed that like a bullet. It's probably in, isn't it? You know what I mean? And it's obviously right on his head as well. It's, you know, Gray's whipped in a great delivery and, you know, it's gone over his head. You know what I mean? And he could have easily got it. He's obviously just closed his eye, like you said, and you know, that's what I mean. A top striker there buries that. You know, and I genuinely think, I don't know what you think, but I genuinely think if Dom plays in that game, we get at least a draw in that match. I genuinely think that. I think we would have carried enough of a threat to warrant, you know, scoring at least a goal in that game, definitely. And we just lacked that real striker's cutting edge. I mean, you saw that finish, I don't know if you've seen it over the weekend from Callum Wilson. Have you seen it where he, the outside of his foot? I mean, that's not even half a chance, is it? But because he's obviously a very good finisher, he's a natural forward. You know what I mean? He's buried it, hasn't he? And that's won them the game. They were 1-0 up, and that's won them the game. That's the difference. And I think that's what we really lack. We really lack that cutting edge up top, like I said before.
Yeah, we did. And obviously, we've said, you know, and everyone who's looked at the game, pundits, whoever it might be, have already made the point that that's the position within that side that we really need to look at. And we are, you know, we are busy. Yeah, we certainly got our fingers in many pies when it comes to looking for a striker, that's for sure. And we will discuss that shortly. But before we obviously finish the Chelsea game, well, there was a couple of obviously negatives from the game. Obviously the defeat, but then the awful injury to Ben Godfrey. You just couldn't write it, you know, was it 10 minutes into the new season and Ben Godfrey, you know, particularly tackle after his own mistake and has broken his fibula. Obviously, even worse was the fact the ball was actually out, went behind for the corner. The line, you know, when it wasn't just, you know, half a yard, it was a good 2 or 3 yards over. The linesman's not even picked it up. Plays carried on. Godfrey's then made that tackle, which he never had to. And obviously, that happens. And obviously, later on in the game, we see, you know, Umeni yet again. You know, breaks down, ankle injury, doesn't look particularly good according to the manager. And it puts us two centre-halves down. And two centre-halves, obviously, who started the game, who Frank Lampard sees as, you know, two of his main centre-halves. And, you know, it causes us yet again issues in the short to medium term from both a transfer perspective, because we've had to, you know, whether we're going to or not, we have to dip our toe in the transfer market in regards to a centre-half. But also, as well, if we were looking to sell, say, Yerry Mina or even Michael Keane or what have you, you've got to look at that again now because of the fact that we've got two centre-halves injured for, you know, I mean, Godfrey's 3 months, God knows how long Yerry Mina's going to be. You know, he could be less longer. Who knows?
Yeah, the two blows they were, particularly the Godfrey one, mate. I mean, I was sitting in your seat, like you said. Normally, I'm obviously in the upper bullings, but you're in the paddock with your season ticket, aren't you? And he was right in line. I was pretty much not far from the linesman. And then as soon as the ball got played by Godfrey, he's obviously played it blind. It was a poor back pass. Pickford's obviously tried to retrieve it and keep it in, which is natural. But it was clearly, like you said, a good 2 or 3 yards out. I could see that from the seat, and I wasn't directly in line with it. So, but as we've spoke about this since, but you know, it's that classic. The linesman doesn't want to flag it because in his head he'll be thinking, "Well, VAR will check that. Let the next phase of play run." It's like the offside thing, isn't it? When clearly, it's, you know, sometimes you know the guy's clearly offside, but the linesman doesn't raise his flag until obviously the play stopped. You know what I mean, and then that next phase is finished. It's pathetic because guess what? When you do that, something can happen. It's only a matter of time before someone gets injured. And that's exactly what's happened here. The ball's clearly gone out. Pickford's tried to keep it in. And Jordan, in fairness, should have actually said, once he's kicked it straight to Havertz, he should have basically said himself, it's gone, isn't he? Should have basically just stopped. Because then they would, you know, Havertz could have put it in the net, but then they would have taken it for a corner, wouldn't they? You know, Pickford should have just stopped as well instead of engaging the player or certainly looking like it's still, you know, play on. And obviously Godfrey, as a result of that, ends up thinking, well, I've got to make the tackle now. And as Godfrey, as we know, he loves to, you know, to put a tackle in. And let's be fair, it was a fantastic tackle. He got the ball, then clashed into the man, and his foot's just got caught, hasn't it? It's got caught in the ground, and it looked horrific. And I feel for him in a way because officials have, you know, they've got to be doing their jobs. If that official puts the line flag up straight away, referee sees it, even if he's got an earpiece on, stops the game, corner. Godfrey doesn't tackle. You know, it's still a good 5-6 seconds before Godfrey puts that tackle in after it going out of play. You know what I mean? So he would have eased his... And look, he wasn't to know he was going to break his leg, of course. But that's what I mean. This is the problem with this rule where you don't raise a flag because they think, well, VAR will bail us out. You know what I mean? And I said to a couple of lads around me, saying that was definitely out, wasn't it? Did you see that was out? And a few of them said, oh, I couldn't see properly. But I clearly saw it was definitely out. And it turned out to be the case. It was miles out. You know what I mean? Someone in the Gladys could have bloody thrown it back. You know what I mean? So, to be fair, it was a bad decision and it's resulted in us losing, you know, our centre-half, really. Let's be honest, our only centre-half with any real pace, isn't it? You know what I mean? And that's why he's in the three, because Godfrey, you've got Tarkowski, who's obviously an out-and-out defender. You had Mina, who was obviously a similar mould, you know, out-and-out defender, and Godfrey's your pace. So, if anything, if we play a high line, any team trying to get in behind us, he's the guy like Kyle Walker for City, isn't he? He's the one that's going to be covering. Or sweeping up behind it. So that'll be a blow for Frank. Really will. I mean, Mina's a blow as well, but I mean, we know Mina's just like, you know, God, you know, he's worse than Owen Hargreaves, isn't he? You know what I mean? He's constantly on the bloody treatment table. And, you know, his injury was farcical, that he's rolled his ankle there. If he just rolls that back with his left foot, by the way, instead of trying to run around it on his right foot, he doesn't do his ankle. You know what I mean? He was ridiculous. But anyway, he's done it. And we knew that he was going to be out. We just didn't know it was going to be within 60 minutes of the first game of the season. So, but yeah, I don't know what you thought of the Godfrey one. I just thought it was just bad officiating again. And I don't want to get on the officials over and over again because it's an easy thing to do. But when things like that happen and you lose, you know, arguably a relatively key player because of an incident that could have been prevented, it's just a joke, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's obviously frustrating, and everyone at the time I noticed on social media was obviously picked up on it, and a lot of blame was then levelled towards the officials. And you know, in that situation, it's correct; it could have been avoided. Obviously, it's a freak incident, isn't it? You know, you can't foresee the fact he's going to throw a tackle in and then break his leg. But if you do your job correctly, then it doesn't get to that particular point. But you know. Craig Pawson, wasn't it? You know, he's a poor referee. I mean, you look at the whole game, Sterling was at times not being touched, going down, winning free kicks. And, you know, there was one occasion, was it Patterson gives someone the smallest of shoves? It wasn't a free kick anywhere on the pitch, and he blows up, and sometimes you just don't stand the chance with certain officials. And That was him. You know, it's day one, week one of the Premier League, and he's out. He set his stall out early there to basically to be crap again this season. So we look forward to welcoming back to Goodison Park in the near future. But you know, I think it's really important that we do look at the positives. We highlight the positives and we focus on them, because you know, it wasn't doom and gloom. Atmosphere was great. You know, the reception for the players was fantastic. And it was just, you know, okay, disappointing not to get something from the game. You could argue we deserved the points. I'd probably say we did on the balance of play, to be honest. But it is what it is. We now move forward to obviously Aston Villa on Saturday, which is another big game, first away game of the season.
Well, one thing I wanted to mention quickly, mate, was, I don't know whether you saw, obviously you watched the game over in the States, but Dele Alli had a big chance second half, didn't he? Patterson, again, aggressive, you know, got in between the fullback and the centre half. Arguably could have had a shot, by the way. But obviously decided to square it for Dele, and it was a good ball. I mean, Dele there, a sharp Dele there, hits that probably first time. An even sharper Dele realises the full picture of the situation and does an overmate. If he dummies that pass, right? If he dummies that and steps over it, Gray's right behind him and Gray just rolls it into an empty net. Because obviously, like, Thiago Silva's come across to engage Dele, and Dele's obviously tried to take a touch. As soon as he's taken a touch, he's on him, isn't he? He's on him straight away. And obviously, you know, watching Thiago Silva in the flesh, I said to you before, like, you know, he's you know, I don't want to say a joy to watch because the opposition, but you can see he just reads the game so well. Yes, he's protected in a three, obviously, at the back, but he just reads the game so well, mate. He was ahead of it, you know, in terms of our strikers so many times, like in terms of reading the situation. But anyway, if Dele does an over there, like I said, if you look at it again, it's a tap in for Gray. And that's what you need, just that little bit of quality. You know what I mean? Like I said, a lethal finisher there. I'm not saying Dom's a lethal finisher, by the way, but you know, like I said with Callum Wilson before, you know, they bury that, don't they? They either hook it in the corner or they basically step over it, like I said, and then it's a tap in for the guy behind him. So it was devastating there in that respect that we didn't take that chance, because that was a good chance. And I think, you know, what do you call it? McNeil came in for a bit of stick on some quarters of fans, not at the ground, by the way, but on social media. I thought he played all right for his debut. He worked hard. Everyone like, oh, yeah, he hasn't got any pace. Well, we all knew that. I don't know what people were suddenly expecting. We all knew, no, he hasn't got pace, but what you could see live, he's got a lovely technique, he's got a nice left foot, you know, and obviously he's working his way up in terms of fitness. People criticised the sub because Gray had a shocker and saying that, why has McNeil come off instead of Gray? But McNeil clearly couldn't have played 90 minutes and obviously took him off, but I thought he played all right on his day. But he got into a couple of good spots on the edge of the box as well. He tried to reverse one for Decore, and again, Thiago's read it, and he was in a position there on his left foot. He scored a worldie, didn't he, in the friendly the other week, McNeil. Have a dig. He's clearly got a good strike on him. Have a dig there. A couple of times it opened up for him and he went to pass it. You know, have a dig. You never know. You know, if that comes off the defender's shins or whatever and wrong foots the keeper, you know, it would have been a clever reverse to Decore, but, you know, it's just a bit too finicky, that, for me. Just get a shot off. You know, there was a game of few chances. Get some shots off. So yeah, overall, there was lots of positives to be taken, and if we can just sort out that, you know, that front line, I think, you know, that gives it bodes well, doesn't it, for the season? It really does for me. I mean, it, you know, providing we don't get loads of injuries again, it does bode well, and I feel a lot more confident that Frank is and his team have clearly looked at the weaknesses where we were in terms of, you know, not just physically in the team but mentally as well. We lacked leaders. We've been saying that for years, haven't we, on this podcast? He's brought in two leaders now. And then obviously as well, he's addressed, you know, the midfield now as well, in terms of physicality and pace and power. So, you know, credit where it's due, massive credit where it's due there. And hopefully that'll bode well for the rest of the season.
Yeah. And obviously since then, we've had a couple of signings confirmed, which in my opinion, are really positive steps and really good acquisitions for what we actually need. And we're going to discuss them after this short break.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet?
Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Welcome back to the second part of this week's Unholy Trinity podcast. And it's on to transfers. Like I said, busy week in terms of transfers for Everton. The first one through the door came out of nowhere, to be honest with you. And that was the signing of Connor Cody. There was murmurings, wasn't it? Was it late on last week? So it was over the course of the weekend about Connor Cody. And obviously with the injuries that we saw suffered by Ben Godfrey and Yerry Mina, whether that then ramped up talks between Everton and Wolves, I don't know. But Connor Cody through the door, was it Sunday? Sunday he was announced, wasn't he? And we all thought it was going to be Amadou Onana first. He was in the crowd against Chelsea, just waiting to get a couple of things signed off by Lille. But Connor Cody really, really moved quickly and was confirmed as an Everton player on Sunday, which was really exciting to see. To be perfectly honest with you, you know, he comes out on his first interview. I think he spoke really, really well. Obviously, we know he's a Liverpool fan. Although some people saying he was an Everton fan, judging by pictures that were brought out of the woodwork from when he was a kid. But listening to him, knowing what he's like as a footballer, from what I've seen of him over the last few years in the Premier League with Wolves, understanding a bit about his character, I think that it's another real positive step in terms of getting a sign into the club that fits exactly what we need at this moment in time.
I agree with you. I think it's a cracking signing. I really do. You know, he's you're right. He spoke fantastically well. Clearly wanting to get that in early, how passionate he is about wanting to play for the club and everything else. And, you know, he's missed, I think I read he's missed one league game in 4 years or something like that in terms of, and I think the only reason he missed that as well was due to isolation because of COVID or something.
He had COVID, yeah. He said in his interview he was absolutely devastated in seeing his hair up because he had to miss a game because of COVID. So that shows you what kind of character he is as well.
Well, yeah, exactly. And it tells you about his durability. Both him and Tarkowski have obviously been very durable at the opposite end of Yerry Mina, isn't it? You know what I mean? So I think those two at the back, whether we play in a three or a two, you know, will really add experience. And as I said, they'll improve those around them. I think they'll have a massive effect on Holgate, definitely, because obviously, you know, they'll be talking to him constantly. They won't let him get away with stuff, you know, when he likes to do kamikaze stuff sometimes that he does. I think they'll prove to be two very shrewd signings, them two. And as I said, the durability is one of the factors, but also the fact they're both leaders. Connor's a very good passer of the ball, like obviously Tarkowski is as well. And I think it's a very shrewd sign. Now it's interesting that Wolves are letting him go because they're reverting from a back five to a three at the back to two at the back, isn't he? So back four. So whether he can play in the four, they obviously maybe don't quite rate him as highly in the four, maybe. So that'll be interesting to see what Frank does with that. I do think with the personnel we've got at fullback currently, I think the five suits us, by the way. Like I said, particularly for Patterson, you know, that really allows him to get forward, which is his strength. So it will be interesting to see how he sets us up. But yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a very cute signing. Okay, yes, he's 29, but we've also signed players at the younger end of the market. So you know, Frank did say, didn't he? And you know, when we were being linked with the likes of Barkley and Winks and Gilmore's, we were all a bit sort of, you know, geez, that doesn't excite me really. That, you know, we were looking at the sort of cheap end of the market, loans and sort of next to nothing in freebies. And yet, you know, he clearly said, didn't he, a couple of weeks ago, you know, Judge is at the end of the window. Clearly said that. I think it was after one of the results in America. He clearly said, Judge is at the end of the window. Then make your final decision. And to be fair, you know, we so far, you've got to say, it's been a very, really, really strong window. We, like I said before, he's had half a season with the players. He's identified where the weaknesses are. And he's pretty much filled a lot of those gaps. You know, like I said, we're only really, you know, a striker / winger / forward away from having a really, really strong window, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, we spoke about this window and how it could be frustrating, a difficult one for us because we've got to obviously make sure we get a big sale, which we got early in the Charleston to Spurs. So we thought it wasn't going to pan out probably how it has so far. And if we're being honest, it's going really well. What we'd like to see, as we've already said, is a striker come through the door. That I think is, well, it is. It's absolutely vital going forward that we sort that out. And obviously, we need to probably see two or three outgoings as well, you know, to get some funds back in for fringe players who now, obviously, if you look at players that we've brought in positions that we've strengthened, we can probably afford to let certain players go as well. So it's got all the makings of a really strong window where we can just cap it off with that striker and get Jesus Garnaghy over the line. And I think all Everton fans will be delighted with the window if that's what happens and that's what we come out with. And, you know, I think look at centre-half now with the injuries that we've got. You know, Mikhailenko, he slotted in, didn't he, in the three against Chelsea late on when Vinagre came on. So that's always an option.
He's a converted centre-back, isn't he?
He is, yeah. That's an option. He can play there. You know, you've obviously got Cody, Tarkowski, Holgate. I still think there's Michael Keane might move on. I really do. I still think that is possible. The fact he didn't come on at the weekend as well suggests that maybe Frank Lampard is thinking now and this is only me, by the way, reading in between the lines, maybe he hasn't got the character potentially. And he's one player that he may look to move on. But
It'd be interesting that, because I think we were well stocked, but don't forget we lost two at the weekend in one match. Yeah. So suddenly, let's say, God forbid, we're talking about the durability of obviously the two new centre backs. If one of them suddenly gets injured or Holgate, then suddenly you're pretty light all of a sudden, aren't you? You know what I mean? So I think if it wasn't for those injuries, I do think the likes of Keane possibly would have gone. Possibly, I know West Ham were sniffing around Holgate apparently. So, yeah, I do think you're right. But I think now will be certainly until January. I think that he'll probably want to keep the likes of Keane and that, you know, around the squad, purely because, you know, the games up until the World Cup, we're playing something like 18, 19 games, aren't we? You know what I mean? So we're going to need to rotate there as well. Certainly maybe for the early rounds of the cup, etc. You know what I mean? So it'll be interesting to see what he does there. You're right. If a good offer comes in, obviously you'll probably look at it, but I just think he'll probably look to keep him until January now, I think.
Yeah, but he's going to find himself, I think, way down the pecking order. And if Godfrey and Mina were fit, then I think, like you say, it'd be nailed on that he'd probably look to move on, because I think Holgate will. I think at the weekend, I think we'll see a three of Cody, Tarkowski, and Holgate. You need someone with pace, and obviously at the moment, Holgate's is that man. But no, I think Cody's very, very good acquisition. Loved the way he spoke. I thought the interview that he did, it was Monday he signed, actually, not Sunday, but it's been so quick and so close together. You lose Saturdays. I just thought he spoke really, really well. And he can see that he wants to be here. You know, obviously it's great for him. His family's around the corner. He's from the Merseyside area. His lad is, you know, he's at Finch Farm. His five-year-old training, which is great. So obviously fantastic for him. But we've got a real quality centre-half there. And someone who others can learn off between him and Tarkowski, that, like you said earlier on, that will help. Holgate, even Mikhailenko, when he's coming in and having to play centre-half, it'll really help those younger lads and the more inexperienced players, you know, learn off two seasoned professionals. So I was delighted when that one was announced, say, really, really quick. Great bit of business there by the club to get that loan done. And then the player that we thought was going to be announced first this week, as I say, in the crowd against Chelsea. Another one which moved quickly, didn't they? You know, Amadou Onana was going to West Ham, by all accounts. There was a deal agreed between West Ham and Lille. And then all of a sudden, Everton came in from, not from nowhere. There was interest. There's been interest. But it was, you know, we came in and almost gazumped West Ham. And the player himself said there's only one place that he wanted to go, which was, again, nice to hear. 20 years of age. Obviously, it's a big price tag. But if the down payment isn't big, a lot of the money is also based on appearances and bonuses and winning trophies and things like that. So it's not, in the grand scheme of things, and the fact he's on a long-term deal as well, it's a really good deal we've got ourselves there for a player. You know, that Roberto Martinez has basically said he's potentially the hottest prospect in Europe. So how excited are you to see what he can do as he develops and progresses in the Premier League?
Well, mate, it's definitely an upgrade from Billy Gilmore, isn't it? So I mean, you know, we've been, like I said before, we've been saying for age, we need someone in the middle of the park, pace and power. You know, this lad seems to have that in abundance. You know, looking at some of the clips of him, he clearly likes to put a tackle in, he's aggressive. Got that almost like early vibes of Patrick Vieira in him. He's very tall, isn't he? He looks very good technically. Obviously, since then, we've seen reports coming out. You know, Martinez has had a good word with him, apparently, obviously, because he's Belgian. Senegalese born, isn't he, but Belgian. And obviously, you know, Roberto's probably put in a good word for us, so fair play to him. He was obviously describing him as phenomenal, no doubt, this morning. But no, I think we have got a really top young player there. I did speak to Piv briefly, actually. I know we all miss him on these sort of podcasts now. He's not doing them as much these days. And asked him his thoughts, and he basically said, yeah, he is well regarded as, like, you know, a real player with talent, but also to exercise a bit of caution because he's only 20. He's a very confident lad. He can clearly see that early doors with his interview and everything else. But he's only a kid still, and I don't think he'll throw him in straight away, for example. I think he'll bleed him in, particularly if we get Gay in as well, you know, and Gay will obviously come, you know, straight into the side pretty much straight away, I would imagine, but depending on his fitness. But I think, let's be honest, mate, they're the type of signings we've been saying for ages that we want coming through the door. You know, we've looked on enviously the likes of Brighton, you know, and you know, even the likes of Brentford and people like that. You know, you've made what you'd call, like, really astute signings, haven't they? You know, look at Brighton now with Bissouma. They brought Bissouma in, you know, for, I think they got him for, like, was it 10, 15 million? He's been brilliant for them. One of the best defensive mids in the league. They've sold him for 25, and then now they've got this Casado through that they got through a couple of years ago, but they've sent him out on loan, whatever. You know, he's arguably man of the match against United the other day. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's just being really sensible, isn't it? You know what I mean? I mean, you're bringing in this lad here. Yes, we may have overpaid for him initially. You know, you want to be getting him before he moves to Lille, don't you, for like 7-8 million quid or something like that. But, you know, ultimately, we've brought a lad through. He's only 20. He's all the attributes we want. And look, if he performs to his, you know, and we can get that talent out of him, and he performs to the level that people are saying he's capable of, you know, we could double our money on him in 2 or 3 years, couldn't we? You know what I mean? And that's the whole point, is signing players, intelligent signings, in the right age bracket, you know, ticking all the boxes in terms of attributes, with a view, you know, to potentially selling them on and then reinvesting and maybe signing two players with that. And that's how we've got to do it now. You know, that's the way FFP is. We're not the likes of Chelsea, unfortunately, and other clubs in the league can just go out and just spend 150 million every window. You know what I mean? So we have to be clever. And it clearly is now looking like finally the penny's dropped for Mashiri. He said he was going to stay away from proceedings indirectly. He's pretty much come out and said that. And these signings really strike me as being, it's Kevin Thelwell and Lampard that are clearly, you know, involved in bringing these players in. You know, it doesn't stink of a Keir Jurabchin type link up, does it, with Mashiri and that? You know what I mean? It really looks like we're actually thinking about, you know, our actual transfer procedure here, rather than just going in and signing anyone that's available. There clearly is a thought process behind it.
Yeah, that said it on social media yesterday, I think it was, you know, in terms of we seem to have a plan and a structure in place, and both Frank Lampard and Kevin Thelwell are getting on with the job, which is great to see. You mentioned already, you know, we've got a mixture of ages. You know, we've got Onana, who's coming, who's 20, Dwight McNeil, young player. And you look at the other end of the scale when you've got the likes of Cody and Tarkowski. But it's what we need, you know, it's a good mix. But we've brought in Onana, who, like you say, in 2 or 3 years' time, if it goes to plan, he could be worth that 50, 60 million pounds. And straight away, you're making clear profit, which is exactly what we've should have been doing over the last 4 or 5 years, which is what we haven't. But more importantly for me, we're bringing in a player who, like Roberto Martinez said, you know, he's a hot prospect in Europe. He was sought after. But he's got the attributes that we've wanted in the middle of the park for many, many years. We've wanted a big, tall, rangy, athletic central midfielder to come into there and, you know, and command the area, command the middle of the park, break up play, carry the ball. He said himself he's comfortable to play anywhere in the middle, you know, whether that's defensive as a six or further forward as an eight, you know, to make things happen. Really important message, like you said. He's 20 years of age. So we've got to be patient. Don't get on his back. Don't be start giving him stick. He's going to make mistakes. Of course he is. You know, this is a totally different league than the French league. So he's going to make mistakes. He's only made a handful of appearances really for Lille, if we're being perfectly honest. So let's give him the time to settle and get used to the Premier League. I can't see him being thrown in from the start on Saturday. I think if Garner Gay goes through, then he'll probably come in. Obviously, Iwobi was terrific. We said that already against Chelsea. Decore looked a lot better. So we could go with what we had and maybe change up who plays up top, and then Cody might come in at the back, obviously, with the injuries that we've got. But in terms of Onana, I can't see him coming straight in. But we've got to be patient with him. We've got to allow him to develop and grow and full of confidence. He spoke really well. I think they mentioned his confidence of being one of his main attributes and the fact that he's his own biggest critic as well. So he's got high standards, and you know he wants to be here, which is really important. And like you said, you know, it's a coup for the club, and it's a really, really positive signing. And it's a kind of signing that we want to see more of, as obviously Frank Lampard's time at the club and Kevin Thelwell's time at the club continues. And really, really exciting. Looking forward to seeing him develop.
I also like, you know, when Frank got interviewed, asked, didn't he, you know, about Onana, obviously, in the post-match. And he said he's not fully a player yet, but, you know, player they've been tracking, they've been speaking to, obviously, earlier in the summer. I think they were initially told by Lille, from what we've heard, that, you know, he's not for sale, basically. And it took really West Ham to sort of like agree a sort of deal with the club for us to come back in. And like you said, that he clearly then made it very clear he was coming to us, which was good. Because you'd think, you know, West Ham, you know, whilst they're not a bigger club, they're certainly a more stable club, aren't they, in the last couple of years under Moyes. And obviously they had a really good run in Europe. They've got into Europe again. But to grab him there is a real coup for us, mate. It really is. And hopefully, you know, he'll showcase that talent you know, on the pitch over the next couple of years, at least. I think it's a real coup for us getting him in there. Like you said, with Gay, you know, he offers us, obviously, you know, the work of almost two midfielders, doesn't he, sometimes, just a Gay. So with him coming in there as well, suddenly our midfield looks a lot more, well, it looks more balanced. It looks, you know, it looks more solid, you know, in terms of athletes. And this lad's 6 foot, what is he, 6 foot 4, 6 foot 5? He's going to carry a presence. He's going to carry a presence in both boxes as well, isn't he? You know what I mean, some guy that's obviously like, you know, if he's coming up with a corner, he's the same height as Yerry Mina. You know what I mean? And like you said, with the two centre halves, you know, the centre halves, as we know, tend to mature, don't they, as they get older as players? You know what I mean? They tend to hit their peak a bit later, and as they learn the game more and that. And these two signings strike me of the whole sort of Distan and Jagielka sort of signing them at a certain age. You know what I mean? And you know, if they keep themselves fit and healthy, which they clearly are, professionals, as you can see, good professionals, then you could get 4 or 5 years out of him, you know, like we did with Distan and that. So I think, again, just really astute signings. Obviously, hopefully get this Gay one over the line. It seems to be a hold-up based on bonus payments that he's owed by PSG. Hopefully that'll get sorted soon, you know, in time for the weekend. Because, you know, by now, that's going to be a tricky game, this. I know Villa got tonked at the week, or not tonked, but they were certainly outplayed. But yeah, it's their first home game of the season. Our record there is not the best, is it? You know what I mean? We got turned over there last year relatively easily, so I think it'll be a tight game.
Yeah, it will. And before we jump into that, as I say, we've had a couple more links to strikers. Obviously, Brozier's being the one out in front. He keeps on cropping up. But today, like I say, just before we started recording, actually, the Che Adams link has come about via The Athletic and other outlets as well. A loan deal with a view to purchase at the end of that. What are your thoughts on him? I quite like him in terms of his attributes personally. You know, he's quick, he's strong, he's powerful. Obviously, he hasn't got a particularly fantastic scoring record. But I think he's done all right at Southampton. Apparently, they say officially they don't want to get rid of him, they don't want to sell. But apparently behind closed doors, they would let him leave. But what are your thoughts on him? Do you think he would be a decent, not so much a replacement for Calvert-Lewin, but someone who can step into his shoes in the shorter period?
What, Shea, you mean? Shea?
Yeah.
He's an interesting player, isn't he? He's aggressive, he's strong, he's good with his back to goal. He's got a decent shot on him. He's not a bad finisher. He's obviously, I don't think, on Dom's level, but I think in terms of, you know, if it is a loan, what we can't be doing here, mate, is, you know, we clearly, obviously, Brose has been, I think, near the top of the list all summer. What we can't be doing is being held at ransom by Chelsea and letting it go to the last day of the window. A, we'll have played nearly six, well, we would have played six games by then, five league games, one cup game. B, obviously, then it could go to the last day of the window and then they decide to keep him because they can't get anyone else. And they've let Werner go to Leipzig. I would have liked Werner, possibly. I know he's a different mould, Werner, but I think there's definitely a 20-goal striker there in Werner if he's given the service, if he plays every week. But yeah, by the by, I think Adams is not a bad replacement if it's a loan. But like Frank said in his press, and he said, look, Dom's not going to be out forever, he said. Now, I didn't quite really like the sound. That almost struck me as being, well, we can hold on for now until he comes back. Well, in reality, as Dom showed last year, sadly, you know, he suddenly become, from being a relatively sort of robust striker, he's suddenly going to be regarded as an injury-prone striker, isn't he? And how that affects you mentally as well, mate. Yeah, I mean, that will affect him mentally. The rumours are that Benitez brought him back earlier than he should have been. The rumours are that he needed an op, apparently, some medical team thought, and Benitez refused it. And then he broke down in training, didn't he? And Rafa was obviously, you know, let's be honest, probably at fault for that amongst several other bloody things as well. But yeah, so that could affect Dom mentally as well. When you do come back and you're constantly breaking down, it's hard to then trust your body, isn't it, to sort of throw yourself into things, to sprint after balls and all that. So I feel for Dom in a way, I really do, because it means there's very little chance of him going to the World Cup now as well. So yeah, I think Shea wouldn't be a bad option. You know me, Brozier I would like. I think Brozier, whilst he's young, you know, he came on the other day, looked a big lad, he's got a turn of pace. He's got a bit of both about him, really. He can run in behind, he can hold it up. But I quite like Dennis, as you know. I mean, obviously, he's not going to set the world alight, but some of the early sort of highlights I've seen at Watford, he's looked really good, even at the start of this season. And he sort of travels with the ball more than sort of Dom does and that, and he is quite strong with his back to goal. He's sort of an all-round striker himself, really. So I know the Dennis rumours have quietened down quite a bit, haven't they? Maybe they obviously want a bit too much up front than we can be prepared to pay by the looks of it.
Yeah, they have gone a little bit quiet. One that's cropped up today, again, out of nowhere, is the Stadrenne striker, Serhu Gerasi. I can't say I know much about him at all. You know, looked a big, strong lad, I think 26 years of age. 9 goals last season in the French league. So he obviously hasn't set the world alight, but I think he's got similar attributes to Dom. People saying in certain outlets, don't know how true it is, that one seems to be quite far along in terms of sorting that out. I think they want a permanent deal with Everton are looking to try and again get a loan sorted. So you can see, you know, the makeup and the mould of the striker that we're looking at. We're looking at somebody who's a bit more like Dom, you know, like a target man, but athletic, bit of pace, and hopefully, you know, a decent finisher and someone who can occupy centre-halves, which is what didn't happen against Chelsea at the weekend. We need to give centre-halves a bit of an issue and, you know, a physical battle and difficult for the lads, obviously, on Saturday with the players Chelsea have got. But obviously, hard to comment on this lad because no one's seen a great deal of him at all. But like I said, it's those kind of attributes that we're looking to try and bring into the club because it fits perfectly into Frank Lampard's system that we're currently playing.
Yeah, he's got a 1-3 ratio, and I think he's scored 18 goals in 55, and he so 1-3, which is roughly what obviously Richarlison had during his time at Everton. Like you, I've not seen much of him. We've always said on this podcast, you know, and France is a great breeding ground for players that are, you know, suit the Premier League very well. You know what I mean? In terms of producing players with pace and power and things like that's needed in the Premier League in a lot of cases. And, you know, let's see how it plays out. I certainly want to try and see us get someone in before, I think it's midday on, it has to be midday on Friday, doesn't it, in order to play in time for Saturday. So I hope to God we can try and get someone in before then. Because, you know, whilst Rondon is back, he's certainly not the answer. And, you know, he might even start at the weekend, which, you know, fills me with a little bit of dread. Because, you know, like I said before, it won't be an easy game. And we do need someone in, ideally this week, if we can, if we're being selfish and a bit greedy. We want someone in, right, certainly, if not this week, next week, and not running into the last sort of few days of the window, innit?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I think it's important to get, you know, Rodrigo Cigala again before the weekend. Hopefully that can be sorted. Like you say, it's to do with severance pay, bonus pay from PSG. So hopefully we can get that one sorted. But we're going to just take our final break and then have a quick chat about Saturday's game, early kickoff against Aston Villa, after this short break. Welcome back to the final part of today's Unholy Trinity podcast. And it's looking ahead now, Aston Villa Saturday, 12:30 kickoff at Villa Park, first away game of the season. Always great to get the first away game under our belt. Difficult place to go for ourselves in recent years, it's got to be said. We haven't done particularly well. But it's an interesting one. Obviously, Aston Villa went away to Bournemouth, first game of the season, and lost. I don't think many people saw that. Spent a lot of money, Aston Villa as well, which sometimes goes a little bit unnoticed. You know, we had a little chat before, didn't we, about that. It's the old Gerrard against Lampard situation where the media likes to whip it up into something maybe more than it actually is. But what are your thoughts on Villa, Lee, in terms of, you know, what they've done under Gerrard, in terms of where they are? Do you think sometimes they get away with things a little bit because of who their manager is?
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because, you know, any other manager, I think, in that scenario, or most managers in that scenario, certainly if it was Frank, for example, or they'd be getting absolutely scrutinised. You know, he's got a win ratio very similar to Gary Neville, as it was widely shown on social media the other day at Valencia. And obviously, we all know what happened there, and he was sort of ridiculed Neville, wasn't he, for his time there. But Steve, he's a weird one because obviously he went to Rangers. He did a decent job there in obviously a smaller league, a less competitive league. But they did all right in Europe when he was there as well. They obviously stopped the sort of Celtic train and obviously managed to nick a title as well. I've always felt from afar he spoke really well, Steven Gerrard, you know, especially in his press conferences and his pre and post matches. He's always come across very honest. And, you know, clearly maybe, you know, a talented young manager. But, you know, there's clearly problems at the club at the minute. There's a well-documented fallout with Tyrone Mings. He's now potentially going to be out of the club. There's rumours today knocking about that, you know, Ollie Watkins has apparently got a fractious relationship with him. And Watkins may end up leaving the club before the window as well, they're saying. There's rumours, obviously. And they've almost fallen into the trap a little bit of kind of what Everton did is signing players at the wrong end of their ages. You know, they've obviously brought Coutinho in, who started really well, but then has done next to nothing since. He's obviously on a really high wage as well. And then they've signed players, obviously, at the higher age. Brackets as well. So it's a really interesting one. It really is. And you know, they were really poor against Bournemouth again at the weekend. You know, everyone, like you said, would have thought they would have actually won that game. You know, Leon Bailey has looked brilliant in pre-season. And, you know, he's obviously clearly a player with a lot of talent. We know that. You know, he scored against us last season and had, you know, unfortunately for them, hamstring injuries and things like that. So he didn't really play too much for them last season. But, you know, it's a really strange one in terms of there clearly isn't a happy camp, is it? And, you know, we've got to be careful as well. Like I said, our record there in recent years has not been the best. I think one of our most complete ever away performances was there a good few years ago, wasn't it, when we scored 3 and we played outstanding that day. That was a good few years ago, that. You know, we were like the complete team that day. But other than that, I can't remember us really having a great record there. And it's one of those sort of tricky games. Like I said, we got turned over there last year in a relatively close game. And obviously Cash managed to nick that goal, didn't he? And then they got another goal on the counter through Bailey. So the first goal is going to be vital because it'll be a tight game. And we've just got to try and nick that first goal. And I think that'll get... I think in turn, you'll see the fans turn on them a little bit. But in answer to your question anyway about Gerrard, I hate this media obsession in comparing him and Lampard because they compared them all the time when they played at club level and for England, obviously. And they're doing it now, seem to be doing it now as managers. And it's a ridiculous comparison. It's like pathetic journalism again. You know what I mean? It's just like Frank has come into a very different situation. A club that was in, you know, real trouble, and he's managed to turn it around just. And he's going to need time to bring his players in. Stevie's been in there. He's had time to bring some of his players in. And they've arguably got worse. They finished the season really poorly last season. They ended up plummeting down the table, didn't they? So, I don't know what you think, but there clearly isn't, like I said, a happy camp there at the minute.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a few Villa fans on social media. We follow a couple of the accounts who do podcasts and things like that. And there's a little bit of unrest within the fan base, to be honest, in terms of Steven Gerrard and what he's done since he's been there. And again, you know, I suppose it's early days, to be honest, and it's not for us to sit here and judge. It's not our club. But I think most definitely last season, I think the performance of Villa went under the radar in terms of how poor it was, in terms of money they'd spent. And, you know, he had a worse win percentage than Frank Lampard. And you wouldn't have known about it because the media never reported it. It was always about Frank Lampard and what he was doing. And the fact, you know, like you said earlier on, favoured to be sacked first. And, you know, it's all a bit of a nonsense, really. You know, let both managers get on with the job, really, is what the media should be doing. But I suppose it sells papers and things like that. But I think, you know, on the whole, it's, you know, both sides, as we said, started the season with a defeat. Both sides are going to be keen to go out there and get something from the game. I think, you know, get a point on the board. I think for us, a point would be fine. And, you know, that's not negative. That's just, you know, being honest. I think if we can go away from home and get a point and get things kicked off, you know, before we face Forest the weekend after at Goodison, I think it's really important that we do that. We're solid. We're resolute. I think, you know, with Connor Cody coming in into that back three, I think we will be. You know, and like, you know, we've obviously got Onana who we can consider hopefully Odisegana Gay. You said there Rondon, obviously not the answer, but he's back. It's another body, someone who can play that central striker role if needed. So there's going to be more options for us, I think, when it comes to the game on Saturday. But I'm just looking for another good solid performance. A good away performance. We struggled so often, as we know, last season away from home. We were so poor. So I'm just looking for an improvement in terms of the level of our away performance compared to what we saw. I mean, obviously, I was there at Leicester last season, which was fantastic. What, you know, great win. Atmosphere was unbelievable. But, you know, a lot of our away games were like that in terms of we were just holding on. You know, we were holding on because we had to. We were just trying to pick up points. Like to see us just play with a little bit more freedom, a little bit more invention. And, you know, play on the counter with pace and put them under pressure. You know, there's no reason why we can't go there and win the game. And as I say, a lot of positivity from last weekend. Really important we build on that. Fans obviously sell out again as per. It should be a great occasion for the Everton fans, hopefully, and a good performance. But what are your thoughts on results? What are you going for?
I think you summed up nicely there. I think it will be a tight game because obviously, you know, they clearly are struggling up front as well. Ollie Watkins is not scoring goals. They started with Danny Ings up there the other day with obviously Coutinho on one side, Bailey on the other. I do like Boubacar Kamara. I think that's a very good signing for him. Quite a few clubs are sniffing around him and they managed to get him. He's only 22 from Marseille. I think that's a clever signing. It's one of those, like I said before, it's a tight game, isn't it? And in the end, that first goal that Matty Cash got last year changed the whole game. So we need to sort of try and grab that first goal. You know, it does fill me with confidence more that we're more solid than we seem to be, or even early doors. So yeah, I mean, look, at the moment, you probably, with the start that we've had, you probably take a point, worst case, just to get on the board and go from there. But I just have a feeling we're just due a win there, mate. I'm going to say 2-1 Everton. I think we might just nick it. I think we might just nick it. But we do need to certainly carry more of a goal threat.
Yeah. I hope you're right. You know, I think it will be a tight game. I really do. I say both sides are eager to get something on the board. I think it'll be a draw. I think 1-1. And I think we'll be quite satisfied with that, to be honest with you. Just go away with a point. Kick things off. Point on the board. And like I say, a strong and solid performance. But fingers crossed for a positive result. That's us for today. Appreciate everyone listening. As I say, we had a little bit of time off, but we're back. And we're going to be back as well this weekend, as normal, be Sunday, to look back on the Villa game and look ahead to Nottingham Forest at Goodison Park the week after. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.